Mind Show. This is Controlling the Mind and the Machine podcast, and I am your host, Erica Gaines, the CEO and founder of TAC Mobility. We are a law enforcement resiliency and recovery training group, and we focus on making the world a better place by helping police recover from the strenuous work that they do so that they can show up to the next call feeling better, feeling refreshed. Today's guest is Stuart Haskin. He is the founder of Get Safe, which is a training organization that primarily focuses on the community, how to interact with police. They access at-risk youth. There's all kinds of good stuff that they're doing. I hope you enjoy the conversation. And lastly, don't forget to check out the podcast sponsors. What? The podcast sponsors located in the description of the episode. Shout out to Onnit.
Okay, my friends, I am very pumped about this conversation. Today, we have on the podcast Stuart Haskin from Get Safe USA. Hello, thank you so much for being on today. Thank you for joining.
Oh, thank you for having me, for sure. I think it's super cool because I've been listening to some of your podcasts and I just love your energy. I love your passion for what you do. It's and in our world, Get Safe, we're working with change makers, and you're a freaking change maker for sure. So it's an honor to be here.
I'm fucking here for that, dude. Okay, so
by the way, you're an F-bomber, and I have a buzzer here because my kids may listen to this, and every time I say an F-bomb, it costs me $1. So I put a buzzer on my phone.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to get you to say a few of them because I'm all about your kids. So I was introduced to Get Safe when one of your associates reached out. So you guys are actually one of the sponsors for the upcoming training that is actually this week, which once this episode airs, it will be in past tense, but we put together a free training for police because we recognize that departments and funding are just not reliable at this stage. So you guys were really fantastic and you decided to partner with us. So one, thank you very much for joining us on that.
No, really thank you for allowing us. And we don't do that a lot because we're a small agency as well, but the work you're doing is super important, and any way we can get it out there, you know, that's our thing. Is ultimately we like collaborating, and if someone's doing what we're doing, as long as it's getting out there and it's done in a way that it grows the law enforcement's, you know, thoughts and mentalities and gives them more tools to be safer and all that stuff, you know, that's what we're about, making change. That's our changing mindsets, changing outcomes.
Yeah, and I really like that. So what attracts me to a training organization like yours is that you also are focusing on kind of closing that space that is like just so vast, to be honest, in between law enforcement and communities. And with each passing day, it feels like it's just this chasm that will not stop growing. So I think it's really important to have companies like Get Safe that are going, no. How do we get closer? Because getting farther apart is like not the solution. The community component is, I think, really, really important, because I don't think, you know, the people that are listening to this podcast are more likely on the police side. So there's this built-in like accountability system, and there's a lot of like mandatory trainings. And unfortunately, the majority of the public, we don't have access to those types of things. And I hear pretty consistently that there are so many, you know, from the police perspective, there's so many rules for us and there's no rules for the public. So what does community training look like on your end?
Well, our initiative is Bridges the Divide, because you're right, there's a huge divide between community and law enforcement, and we all need each other. We, you know, law enforcement needs positive interactions in the field, and civilians and community need law enforcement. And so we decided so when we're out there, okay, our agency has taught thousands of law enforcement officers, and say, who's teaching the community? And they're right. This is not a singular problem. It's a systemic problem. We need to be able to We need to teach community how to interact properly with law enforcement. We need to teach kids how, you know, the old days of yes, sir, no, sir, no, ma'am, yes, ma'am, is gone. You know what I mean? You know, it's like, I'm videotaping you and you're in trouble. But showing the different things, we, you know, part of it started years ago. We do this program called the GRIP program, Gang Reduction Intervention. And we would bring law enforcement out in uniform to this day. And many of these kids were either being groomed to be in a gang or they're being bullied by the gangs. And we'd have like 30 of them. And the cops would show up outside. They set up super nice. Orange County Sheriff's helped us out. Santa Ana PD. This is with the District Attorney's Orange County. And a lot of the kids wouldn't go out there because of the behavior that, you know, they've seen. They've seen their cousins and their uncles and their parents hooked up. And so they were afraid. But finally, they would come out. We'd give them questions, and the officers would just kind of talk to them and say, have you ever been bullied? Yeah, I've been bullied. You know, what are you ever afraid out there? Yeah, I'm afraid. So it kind of, you know, that whole humanizing the badge. And it was really sad. We brought a bloodhound out. I don't know if you've ever seen the big bloodhound with the flock of ears.
Oh, yeah, with their big ears.
They barely move. But a couple of kids wouldn't go out there because all they were raised with was fighting pit bulls. So they were terrified. And eventually, they got their face licked and all that. Yeah, that sounded a little weird, but yeah, it came, you know, they were able to meet. So we're trying to, when we get in front of community, and I'm able to do it, you know, I'm a reserve deputy, done it for 20, almost 22 years. And before that, worked with defensive tactics and law enforcement. So very big supporter. I mean, obviously I'm part of it. And they asked questions. And why did they do this? And we had an incident where it was in Orange County and a kid with developmental disabilities was tased. And I looked at it like, oh, okay, good. And another partner or a trainer in our community, in our agency, is a community member. He goes, what? I can't believe they did that. I go, why? This gentleman was there. He could have ran out in the night traffic that was going on. He had a thing that looked like a weapon, and they didn't go to lethal force. And I thought it was a win for sure. And those are the things that we explain to community, that law enforcement, they're not therapists. They're not mediators. They're not babysitters. Use them when you use them, because we have so many escalations that happen. I got called the other day, about a month ago, and it was a dad frantic that his son was arrested. And I go, what happened? He goes, oh, my wife called on him. This gentleman was about the kid who was called on. It was about 6'5", person with a disability. And, you know, and they called him to kind of settle things. The mom did that. But all of a sudden they were sitting at the table and everything seemed fine. And the gentleman with autism walked to his room. But that was his safe place. The officer didn't know and didn't understand. He said, we're not done yet, and grabbed him. And the kid flailed, tapped the weapon, and it's an assault on an officer. And now he's in jail. So what we can do is on both sides give training tools. But it's that learn behavior.
Wow. So I feel like that's not like a unique story. Like,
no.
I've heard that many, many times. And I'm a parent. Like, I'm a parent, and I've had a very similar situation. Not my child doesn't have autism, but I remember like in the middle of COVID when things were like, hold on a second.
What? You have an idea, say you, and you want to podcast and fucking talk about it? Great. Anchor is the place to do it. It's the platform that I use. It's becoming super popular because it's really easy. It's everything that you need to make a podcast, but all in one place. All you do is record your episode and it automatically streams to multiple platforms. So like Apple, Spotify, I don't know where else you would put them, but those are the major ones that I use. So if you want to make a podcast, it's really, really easy to do it. There's tools to like record, you can do free music, all kinds of stuff, but I highly recommend using Anchor. So download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. It's totally easy, totally free. It's how I got started.
We had a situation where the police came out. It was like in the height of COVID, and my kid was just fucking just depressed, just losing his fucking mind because he had been home and like was going stir crazy and all the things, and was just destroying my house and was like yelling out of the window that like I was abusing him. And of course that's not happening, but like at the time I was living in an apartment complex, and then all of a sudden knocking on my front door, yeah. and there are two police officers, and I was just like mortified. And they come upstairs and they see all this shit happening. And the guy that starts, it was a guy and a gal, and the guy starts interacting with my son. And I can already tell, just based off of my own interactions with right. police and training them, like, I know when someone is irritated at being there. Yeah. And that's his demeanor, yeah. which it was not helpful to my son. And I'm watching their interaction, and he's approaching the situation of like, I'm the authority. I'm showing up. Get your shit together. You need to be respecting your mom. Yeah. And I'm just sitting there going, this is not helping fucking anything.
Yeah, no.
I recognize that there's only so much that you can do. What I'm wondering is like, if you've ever been in a company where like your boss decides that there's a new policy or something, and then that it sort of like, effective immediately, the policy goes into action, and you kind of find out about it like after the fact.
Yeah.
Is at what point did things shift in terms of how communities look at police to be all of those things that you just said that they're not? Like, they're not counselors, they're not mental health, like, therapists, they're not your best
caregiver, like, the mediator.
Yeah.
They need to come in, and they're built to come in. That's how they're built. They're built to come in to take care of a situation and move on. Now, what we're trying to help, we have a thing called calm and steady. We want to have the officers take a few more beats so that they can take a little more time in that situation. So we can, you know, engage a little differently. But yes, we let community know that you needed them. And at that time, now we're getting much better interactions for sure. You know, we have some amazing interactions that have happened. We just had one last week. One of our trainers is also a patrol sergeant, and he had a great interaction with an individual with a disability. The kid went missing, and the parents didn't even know, but he was able to read the bracelet. He was able to make a connection, so it didn't escalate more. And those are the things that we're trying on both sides. You know, having parents, like for you, he should have sat down and talked to you and said, hey, what's going on? Because you're there. You can front load him or her, whoever wanted to make contact with them. It gives them more tools. And that's the big thing that we talk about in the community. When you call law enforcement, start with the dispatch. Tell them, oh, I have a son that's COVID crazy. He's just been tied up. He has so much anxiety going on. I don't know what's going on. This behavior is new, or this behavior isn't new. This is what makes him escalate more. This will help the dispatch give the officers on the way up a little more tools to de-escalate as well. And that's part of, you know, everything we want to do. We just want it all to be a community. And then when they show up, if the officers take a moment and talk to the care provider, and, you know, if it's sometimes, you know, in our world, if there's a interact or inappropriate thing going on between caregiver and client, but you know, most of the time you can see that it's not, and you're talking to them and you can help them, this is what's going on, because that gives them a baseline. I mean, it's really hard to come into a situation.
Yeah.
So those are the things we're looking at. But you know, my thing with community is that, you know, it's a learned behavior. So I always tell people, like, okay, so you're driving down with your son or daughter and you get a ticket. And then you drive away. Are you going to look at that, your son down, and go, oh my, that officer was so great. He gave me a ticket for going 15 miles over the speed limit. It's only going to cost me $300. I mean, that's so great. That's not what happens. You go, oh my God, I hate that guy. And, you know, that builds that, you know, not understanding for kids, you know. And I, you know, as a reserve, I'll work these, you know, we work these, work committed these fair things. And I work with a regular. And I can't tell me how many times this happened to me. And I rarely work compared to a regular officer and deputy. And I was walking by, and this lady goes, you see those men? If you don't eat your vegetables, they're going to arrest you. And
then, oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I was with a salty deputy who walked up and go, ma'am, I'm going to arrest you. It's like, oh, boy. But yeah. But it's funny. Then you see this other guy walk by and go, oh, see that man? He's our hero. And I tell people, I go, yes, firefighters are unusually good looking, but why are they the heroes? And you know, I don't really understand. But that's that behavior. You see cops, you know, cops are, you know, it's still on the right side of the law, but it's still kind of a violent interaction. Those are the things that we try and, when we blend community, that it's not, that's not the majority of interactions. It's, you know, and we, like I said, we've been so fortunate. We've done training officers throughout the state, and they're so passionate about making differences in understanding community, as well as we're working with parent groups and caregiver groups to say, because we all know we need each other. And at the end of the day, we all want the kind of the same thing. Everyone wants to be respected. Everyone wants to be heard and listened to.
I think that so in terms of community stuff, it's, I like that you point out that those conversations are being had and parents really are grooming their children for later experiences with police. I was just at this open house thing on Saturday and I was talking with this DUI sergeant, or the DUI task force. And, he's like, I hate getting pulled over by cops. I'm like, I know. I'm like, in my mind, when I see those red lights, I immediately am like, do I have cocaine in the car? And and he goes, oh my God. And it struck me in that moment that maybe the stories that we grew up on, and obviously his experience is different because he's police, but I grew up with stories. And this is my profession. I'm committed to the law enforcement community and supporting them, but I can't help what stories were put into my brain. I didn't have any control over those things. Now, granted, I've had enough interactions with police to know that those things that are in my head aren't likely to happen. But the majority of people don't get to interact with police. The only time that you really need to is
when you
need them.
You need some help, either one.
And depending on the temperature of that, of that whole interaction, you might not get an opportunity to know them in a very calm environment. When you bring police officers into a training, so I know that you guys have a lot of teen-centered interactions. What is the youth component look like? What does that training look like? How do you bring officers in, and why is it so important that's happening, that police officers are interacting that way?
We have worked with all levels of teens for years, anyway, all levels of kids. So we do large assemblies with 500 people, 600 people. We do these smaller survivor courses. We do these community high school trainings, campus trainings, at colleges. And we see the same. And what it is, we try and talk to law enforcement. First, remember your posture. Remember what you have on you. I was at a use of force training, and one of the deputies goes, how come civilians are so squirrely? And I just kind of laughed. I go, do you forget you're wearing a gun and a badge? And that's really weird for them, And we have one of our trainers is an older gentleman, and this is how he described himself. I'm just an old Asian guy. I'm about 5'7". And I never realized people were afraid of me. But they're afraid when you walk out because of maybe the stories you heard. You heard about the badges. And we have these exterior vests that are more orthopedic style because it takes the weight off your hips, as you may know. And and people will put their hands underneath the top so they lift the weight off. But to a civilian, that looks like their fists are there. Oh, my God, he had his hands up. Or he's wearing this military style vest. Mm-hmm. That's not what it's about. And I try and explain to people that it's about your hips. But when working with teens, it's kind of that understanding, because I've had they've had a lot of bad interactions as with teens that we hear. And I was doing a conference, and I remember all these high level operators that were also wanting to learn eventually to work in community and different things for law enforcement. And they'll run into a building with gunfire, but they are terrified of teens because teens could be so mean. Being yelled at by a 12-year-old. And there's a comedian, a friend of mine, or a trainer just shared. It was just funny. They're so mean and they're so true when they rip on you, but it's kind of scary.
Yeah.
But we just talk about making a connection, just talking to them, remembering that when you walk up, they have maybe seen, like you said, maybe stories they've heard, or this is going to be terrible, but realize that at the end of the day, you're there to help them. And that's what we always share to the community. I go, law enforcement at the end of the day wants to help you, wants to serve you to make sure you're safe and you're okay. And they'll do whatever they can. When we talk about working with a survivor, that has maybe sexually assaulted at a time, it's how you approach them, stand over them, it fears them. Have you asked questions? What were you wearing? Because what you're wearing is that's investigative skills. You're building something to help them, but they don't realize that. They start thinking, what am I wearing? what does that matter? I didn't do anything. And that's not why, that wasn't the reason what the law enforcement said. It was because I just need descriptors. So, hey, I just need to know so I can get more information for a case later on than investigators. Can we can push this through?
It's so interesting that you're wanting police to just be cognizant of all of these factors that are at play in terms of like visually, like what that is communicating to the brain. And it's interesting because that's such a big job and task and responsibility that we're putting on police. And I don't like,
I agree.
Like when I think about interacting with my children, take just me and my female body and how I'm interacting with my son, like when he's being a fucking turd and I have to try and like go like, what is my face doing right now? I there's a moment where in order for me to check my body, I have to stop listening to him because I'm so fucking triggered and riled up. And I don't think that very many people can have stopped to appreciate all that goes into having to walk into a situation where it's very unknown, where you have limited information and things could go either way very quickly. But then to be like, hey, you showing up in uniform, that's level one use of force already. Like there's a strong and clear communication that is coming towards that person, whether you have participation in it or not, whether you're smiling or not. Like that's so many things that are going through an officer's mind.
I agree.
Like that's so crazy.
So what? Okay. So I'm a very simple, so I run the agency obviously, but I'm very simple in our approach because law enforcement has so much to do. I always tell people out there, go, law enforcement has to figure out how to work with human trafficking, sexual assault, domestic violence, DUIs, as you mentioned, people with autism. Oh, there's so many components that they have. And in our trainings, we try and make it as simplified as possible because a lot of law enforcement's used to, all right, you're going to do a 40-hour training. Okay, it's so long. We just want to make it simple, give them tools that may work. And also, I always tell community, I go, law enforcement, most of the individuals, they're put into extraordinary situations and they're just ordinary people. You tell a 6-foot or a 5'8", either male or female, hey, you see that 6'3" person on drugs, ripping things, throwing things, has superhuman strength right now because they're whatever out. That is a difficult situation. And so we try and tell law enforcement, and I tell law enforcement, they go, listen, we're teaching the peacekeeper model, the gatekeeper model. But also part of that is you have to have the warrior. You have to keep your updated warrior skills as well, because you have to be that. And that's what I try and tell community. They can only do so much, because you hear community say, oh, they should do a karate move where they just arrest them, or they should. That is not realistic. You know, it's terrifying out there at times when these people are picking up these gigantic rocks and throwing them. And so it's very hard. And that's part of what we at our agency, at least, is bridge the divide. I want it nationally because I want community to understand the really the scary things that they go through. You know, I look at CHP and in our world, in California, it's California Highway Patrol. And everyone jokes back and forth, but I do think that's a scary task. They have to pull over people at night. They don't know what window they're walking up to. Domestic violence are super hard. When I was working private security, I remember this guy was slapping this girl. So I went in, took him down. And next minute someone's grabbing me and I go, oh my gosh, he has a friend. And I look at, it was the girl. She was grabbing me because I had her boyfriend down.
That's so interesting because I've heard very, very similar stories to that, where it's like they get there to like handle the situation. And then the victim is, because of all types of trauma cycles and whatever, she's like invested. And then she goes into that type of response. I want to kind of circle back to something that you said earlier about officers should just be able to do like some like martial arts move, because that is your background. You have a black belt in what?
I have black belts in Kung Fu, Taekwondo, judo. I was a collegiate wrestler. I went through the law enforcement training for Krav Maga, which we did a lot of national training for law enforcement. So I know there are tactics, and you know, there a lot of people see use of force things and they're taking away certain tactics. You know, in California right now, the chokehold is not allowed, even though it gives an individual an advantage where they can try and control, not hurt, not permanently hurt someone, but try and take control of that moment. And those are the things that they do need these tools to begin. And that's what we talk about. The more well-trained an officer is out there, the less escalation there may be, because there's a little level of confidence when you get nervous. And I'm fortunate to get the help with this crucible thing at the Orange County Sheriff's, where these deputies run through all the deputies and officer rookies or before they're finished the academy. They run through these things. They're chasing a suspect. They run around. Three red men hit them. They go through windows. They hit combatants. They go to the ground, which are all tools they'll need. And you see some of the responses. It's like, oh boy, I get nervous out there because this, you know, a lot of people have never even seen things coming at them and they're in law enforcement. Yeah. They put their hands over their head like, oh boy. You know, so those are the things. Yeah, I had started in that world, and I kind of moved from the warrior training to the peacekeeper training, only in the sense is that communication is the number one, right? The number one tool we use. You have your weapons, you train with your weapons, you know, whether it's pepper spray, it's your firearm, your batons, your ground game, your stand-up game. But we use communication every day. And those are the things we're finding that a lot of training officers are not sure they. Because you bring in these young deputies and officers who now are mostly on their phone. You know, it's like, hey, I'm going to talk to someone today. Did you actually talk to anyone today, or did you just text them all day? And that's
I also think too, because it's a heavily male dominated environment and community, communication in terms of like male to male like relationships is nothing in comparison to female to female. So when women come in, there is this like natural like inclination to communicate. And we know that the statistics show that women have a higher rate of or a greater outcome in terms of being able to verbally de-escalate a situation before use of force is even necessary.
Yeah. And you see I see the opposite also when it comes to an assault, sexual assault. In the old days, a lot of times we would see the female deputy or officer escalate a little more because it showed a sign of weakness that there's something happened to this person. But it's everything's better and getting better. Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, you walk in like maybe the female is a better communicator in your situation. Maybe they should have switched roles. But we see just a little bit ago happened to our friends, this old salty sergeant rolled up on a call that they called because he had a crazy guy in the neighborhood. And actually, the young training officer was really good at de-escalating everything. And then the sergeant came in and escalated everything back up. What are you doing here? I'm going to take control. Just what you said.
Yeah.
This is my house. This is I'm in control. And that's where we're seeing a lot of change, which is very good. It's because it's a super hard job. And especially in today's climate, it's, you know, it kind of breaks my heart when I see these officers and deputies who are. I mean, I know so many amazing people that, and I have a close friend that runs in the fires and pulls people out, gets Medal of Honor, and you get lumped into these bad interactions. And I try and tell the public, I go, the ones you see, yes, we can, law enforcement, we can do better. But there's so many amazing people that are doing amazing things. It's like 2% of all the interactions that happen every single day, you know, and in our team, we have so many. I mean, I had one guy who was an investigator. This lady got hurt, robbed. Well, he's over there mowing her lawn and, you know, getting things better. And those things aren't publicized. They're not. So I just feel like, you know, yes, we are doing more, which is good. And yes, there are, you know, when people are learning things and learning the tools of listening and hearing, and just kind of making things present and remember, hey, I'm wearing this vest. So they might be a little scared right off the bat. And what you said, I get nervous. I mean, I haven't had it for a while, but I remember getting pulled over once and I forgot what department I was working with. I think I'm with this department. No, I was nervous.
Right. You just don't know.
I have a badge, you know, and I'm like, gosh, you know, what did I do? You know, and you start, and you, like you say, you go back to your childhood. What did I have? You know, I mean, it was just, so those are, unfortunately, it kind of hurts a little bit in the first interaction because again, sometimes people have these biases that were built in, not even from this officer, you know, it just kind of creates this difficult interaction. But those are the things I think with education. I have a really cool, this cool high school teacher. He's like the total cool guy, serves, is in a band, but he just, because he wants to, he gives talking tools to his group in high school, and they're, you know, at risk kids. So a lot of, you know, difficult neighborhoods that they live in. But he, one time the kid came back, goes, "Oh my gosh, you're not going to believe what happened." I go, "What?" He goes, "I didn't get a ticket today." I go, he goes, "Why? What happened?" He goes, "Oh, I got pulled over." "Okay. And what happened?" He goes, "I don't know. I just did what you said. I just said, I'm sorry. I didn't know what I was doing that." And the guy just said, "Okay, just be careful next time." And he was so happy. But all it was just, he didn't elevate. The officer didn't elevate. There was a mutual respect there. And, you know, and officers, there's the letter and the spirit of the law. And, you know, you see that all the time, you know, and those are the things, like I said, I just want to, our agency is just built to just, we just want to make that connection between community. And
You said something a minute ago about, like, we all have biases. And okay, for anyone listening, calm your triggers down. Okay, I know that I said the word bias and it makes you want to fucking gag. Yeah. But I went through an 8-hour inclusivity and anti-bias training that was completely outside of law enforcement. And everyone that was in the group was coming from these very like corporate backgrounds. And it was so interesting to me how much bias I had that, and I consider myself to be like, I accept everyone. Right. I'm just like, the more the merrier. I think it's really fantastic. But to begin the training, they had us do this bias bias test through Harvard. And they asked us this series of questions based off of how we were raised in terms of religion, all these different components that you don't consider influencing bias. And afterwards, I got this like report of all the areas that are like my blind spots, that it basically tells you, you think this way, which automatically means that you don't believe or agree with this group of people. And I was like,
Nelson, you're a bias.
I didn't know that. Like, I might be accepting of people, but accepting of people doesn't necessarily mean that I think that that person is right. And if I don't think that someone is right, because of how our brains work, we alternatively think that they're wrong. So how does thinking that someone's wrong impact our interactions with one another? And I just thought that it was like so enlightening and just frankly shocking that there are these little seeds again that are just subconsciously like put into my brain by the people around me that just sort of like grow unconsciously, and you don't really know how those are going to impact your interactions with people until you are put in a situation where it might be an us versus them. So my question is, when you see people interacting, how do you see this bias play out? Now, not the typical kind of like everyone kind of jumps to like this race bias. What are some other ways that you see bias playing out in interactions between community and police?
Well, I'll go with the simple, easy one is the pronouns, you know, how you address
them. Oh my gosh, which is also triggering to so many police.
Oh no.
Jesus Christ.
I literally will have an older deputy actually it was an officer in the front row just going, we start about pronouns. What does this have to do with de-escalation? And it's like, if you misgender someone, which I don't really even hardly understand as much as my trainers do, it's going to escalate stuff. So get with your biases. Everyone has biases. And I know, what we tell law enforcement is when you're out there, you got to put them in a bag. You know, whatever you are, and nowadays we have so much divide between politics and masks and COVID. I mean, everything, there is so much bias on each side.
Yeah.
But when you're out there, and it doesn't matter at the time, really. And if you can gender someone correctly or at least be respectful, for me, I've had it. You know, I was on the phone with a pharmacist and kind of had a deep voice, and I said, yes, sir. And he goes, oh, no, I'm a female. And I go, oh, sorry. You know, and it was respectful, but it was, the intent wasn't malice. And I just said, sorry. And then we get kind of caught up in everything. I was at Lowe's looking at ovens, and the lady goes, hey, which one do you like? And I go, I like that one better. I like the knobs better. And I think in my head, oh, my God, I just said knobs. And I go, how terrible is that? Is she going to take that as wrong? I just really meant the knobs on the oven. But nowadays, you never know what could be taken. And in my head, I'm going, I say, don't say that again. And so then she goes, okay, what do you think? And I go, I like the knob. Oh, my, I said it again. You know, but it was the truth. But it's how we all now are kind of, you know, we don't have walking on eggshells in a sense, but are ultimately when we're out in the field, we all have biases. You can't help it. They're built in. But just remember, our job is, if when you're in the field, is to just make that contact, not share, oh, I'm not wearing a mask because I don't care, or I'm wearing a mask, or whatever. Like you said, we don't have to go to the race aspect, but just treat everyone the same. And to law enforcement, we tell everyone, when you pull over someone, treat them like you want another officer or deputy to treat your mom or sister or brother. Because then that's it brings it more into a reality-based community. We say, listen, these are individuals that want to go home at night. They want to be safe. They have kids. They have families. They have lives that they want to participate in. And so if you have biases, try and give this person that opportunity to have a conversation and just be respectful. Start it off respectful. Yeah, you got pulled over. Why are you wasting my time? And you're angry. But that's not even their issue. You are breaking the law. And we talk about antecedents, things that have happened prior to create angry behaviors. We tell officers, maybe that person just had a horrible day. We tell, if you have a bad officer, hey, maybe they just had something poorly happen in their life before. But don't bring in a bad incident every time you get pulled over. You know, we've all had bad issues with them. I don't care if you went to Starbucks and had a mean barista. You know, it doesn't mean every Starbucks barista is mean. So You have to eliminate those biases as you walk in. I had a bad incident. It's going to happen again. So you right away, you're on guard. And that's how we describe it in simple language. Like I said, I'm not trying to create for community. I'm going to train to have, you know, they learn so much, but enough to know where they feel. Officers, same deputies, they have so much interaction. Like I was telling you, these courses are so long. We keep ours short. We give them brief tools that they can walk in and use it, how they assess things, how they can change their mindset a little bit. We talk, and we have some amazing dispatchers on our training staff that have created these really outstanding dispatch programs to help dispatchers help de-escalate everything. And I know de-escalate, and I hate that term because it just makes it's a negative connotation. Oh, we got to de-escalate again. But it's just really just communicating, listening, and listening to them. And that's how, if you can avoid even thinking about your biases, whatever you carry in, and just come and do your job. You're there to make everything safe. Community is same thing. Let your biases go. Whatever you've seen in the news, it's not that person.
So you talk about putting your bias into a bag. That's great. But how do you know that you even have bias? Because I don't think that anybody, I don't want to say that,
yeah,
but
no,
I would say that most people are not walking around going like, I have a bunch of them and I know that I have them. Like, that's the whole point of a bias, is that it's a blind spot. And you can't see your blind spots. That's why they're called blind spots.
Yeah, so that's exactly what the training's called. That's what we do in our training, the blind spot.
How do you give me like a very short way, if you could help me, give me a tool right now of how I can recognize that I have a bias in something. And put you on the spot.
That's a good one. So for us, I would see it as, okay, there, you get a reaction of something. You hear someone speak something and your reaction. And something doesn't sit right with you. Okay, like you're saying, there's not an agreement there. But our thing is to understand. Now, through our trainings, it's a four-hour training and it goes on and on. But right when you see, how is this reacting to you? And my thought is the awareness of understanding this is not sitting right with me. But is it in the context of what we're doing? Because you're not going to heal all bias for sure. You're just giving tools to kind of clear through the bias. And that's where how we would just say, okay, you hear something, this is, and I've had bias situations where people have asked me what nationality I am. And you see in these bias videos, I'm sure you saw a lot of those videos, that some people take that as, why are you being biased? Why are you saying I'm not just from here? And that's not what we're trying to do. That wasn't a bias. So we build those aspects. And for law enforcement, what we do is, like I said, we try and simplify it and just say, if you think these things are coming in, something's affecting you, just, like I said, it's putting it in a bag. And what we're saying, and because we have so many of these things that were integrated in our system, but as we learn more to understand what they are. And so for me, like I said, the simplified thing without going through the training is just to understand that something's affecting me. And I may not know exactly what it is, but my job right there is to understand what's going on with this person and go through. And even if you hear, oh, and even biases from, like I said, biases create after just long-term trainings. You know, I'm out here, oh, this person, you know, was assaulted, but they've been drinking all night, they're out late. Some of our biases, what are you doing out there? Well, you know, and that's kind of that victim blaming aspect. And we're trying to create those situations where you can just kind of put it aside and know what you're supposed to do. And that is take as much information, get help for this person if they need it, and mm-hmm. and take that report as possible. But yeah, it's this, I don't know, it's the simplicity of it is we're trying to create that simplicity thing. Because like I said, our training is 4 hours and it's kind of long. But after the end of the day, if they can just take a couple tips, like I said, understanding of that, oh, I didn't know that. Like you said, you took that test. Oh, my God, I didn't have so many biases. That's the same with me. I look at these things and I go, when we're creating the curriculum, I'm going, oh, my goodness, I have biases. I didn't, like I said, I feel like I'm the same way. I'm a non-judger of my personality. I accept anything, just the Myers-Briggs test, you know, and I'm a feeler. So, but then when you see things, like, oh, I was really not sure why I had these things in my back and head. And I kind of wanted to say, okay, I need to adjust. And it, like I said, it came out by just really just happenstance. It wasn't even thinking when I would say something, oh, I didn't realize I was making someone feel different. And we're in a different world where things are, we have to be more aware of what's going on in our conversations.
And I think that we live in a world that really with just like awareness and education, we've developed so much of our identity is based on these things that we know about ourselves and believe about ourselves, that when someone misidentifies those things or misconstrues those things or seems like they're judging those things, we get like, we can feel personally attacked. And I was listening to this comedian. It was a comedian and she's interviewing a transgender woman and they were talking about pronouns. And she's like, you know, what's so funny is that like adults are like, oh, really? Like pronouns fucking matter? And she goes, if you've ever met a mom and her ugly little baby and you go, oh my God, he's so cute. And she's like, it's a she. And like, she's I know. So angry that you fucking misidentified her bald baby. Like, I'm sorry, you know, but it's like, but we do.
There's no such thing as an ugly baby. That's what Dad was told.
let me tell you right now, I've seen many ugly, dumb little babies. So I have two. It's fine. Babies are dumb.
Yeah, me too. I get two.
But like nowadays we form so much of our identity, I think, around specific things. And I wonder if it's because we are so polarized in our world and things, we're so like siloed that like we sort of have to create this like community and like relationship with ourselves so much. And so in terms of like civilians, we spend so much time focusing on all of these things that make us. And then we might have a negative interaction with police where police don't have the same type of time and opportunity. And I don't want to say awareness because that's not true, but
no, it's not true.
Self-awareness. Great self-awareness is something that happens over time. And when you don't have time, you're not able to develop those things. So the police community, in my experience, that's a very low priority for them versus the rest of the world. We have plenty of time to think about this. We have a lot of resources and tools, and the police community.
You're going to get the argument is that's your job. You need to do this. You need to be good at
that. Right. And it's like,
it's hard.
No.
And we sometimes start off as an icebreaker. What's your greatest accomplishment? And we had this really cool, I think it was a sergeant in the class. He goes, I have very few use of forces in my jacket. And he goes, and it's because, and we found out why. He was raised with an adopted brother that was black with disability. He has a Korean half sister that was adopted, you know, so he raised in this whole thing, and he was able to communicate very well out there. And that's where, like you said, the younger officers are losing some of that communication. And that's where the training officers are trying to help them just to, hey, relax, you know, cause you get out there and they're amped up and that escalates everything, you know, and it's respect. You know, one of our training officers that are in our group as a teacher, he went out to this party and it was a Hispanic party. And the first thing he goes, okay, guess what the rookie did? He goes, well, first he walked on the grass. Okay. Then we get there and guess what's the next,
you were about next to thing? Catch some hands, son.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the next thing he goes, okay, guess what he said next to the owners that we were trying to, it was a noise complaint. We're going to tell him to lower it. Guess what he said to the owner? And we're all going, you speak English? And that's exactly what he said. He said, as soon as that came out of the rookie's mouth, he goes, go sit in the car. Because that's how they wasn't thinking. You know, it's a lesson he's learning. And we have an FTO program as well. And, you know, teaching, you know, it's a 24-hour update, but helping teach and helping FTOs communicate better because things are changing now. And, you know, one of our things are the old days is you learn the way I learn, or you listen the way I tell you. Nowadays, we say, hey, try and make a connection, because everyone has learning different behaviors on how to learn. You know, there's some are, you know, how you describe things. How do you talk to different people? And everyone has a different way to learn things. I'm more of a have to do it before I can learn it. You know, if I have a buddy of mine, when we'd be training together and, you know, kind of higher level martial arts, and he would just see it once and he'd be able to do it. I'd have to do it two or three times and then I would understand it. That's just how I learn. But that's how we want FTOs to communicate to the people that they're teaching, figure out what works for them. I had a Krav Maga instructor who had really our communication styles were completely different. So I just asked him, what works for you? How can I communicate to you that you would understand it better? Cause you know, yeah. I come from a different place and I have, you know, even our agency, we have so many different personalities, you know, from the hardcore alpha officers to the stand-up comedians, to the actors, to the, you know, everyone has a different personality. So you have to learn to understand and interact with them, but ultimately giving the younger deputies and officers tools to communicate. And, you know, cause then that's what we need. Cause it's that's lowering thing, but that's how do you do that? You know, how do you play catch up to a young officer where, you know, like you said, your seasoned guy's been out in the field forever. So he has that, he can walk up, you know, most of the time unless they're angry, like the one you had. But for the
well, I mean, and the same can be said, you know, on the opposite side of that is when you have these very seasoned officers to learn a new skill, like, I love that you said trying to make a new connection. I mean, if it's when we are in these situations, our biology and our evolution kicks in, and using our body is easier because it doesn't require logic and like thinking. It's a doing and it's a feeling. So to think the other way is so counterintuitive to your body that it's not something that like you just naturally do. And I think that if more people, both sides, all people are able to get the education on how to get themselves back into their bodies and out of like their feelings and think about those connections and to think a couple steps ahead. Like I think about, you know, the game Billiards. If you've ever played, so my ex-husband is like all about it. So I, for the last 14 years, have played pool. I know the difference of when, and it's actually kind of like my bar trick. When someone wants to play on a pool table and I see them take a shot, I'm just like, this is okay, cool. This is going to be very easy because you don't know what the fuck you're doing. And I know that you're just thinking about that one single shot. I'm thinking about four shots ahead. And how do I need to set myself up? And I don't think that a lot of people approach relationships, especially when there's conflict involved that way. So I think long term, if the goal is to get home safe to my family, because at the end of the day, this is a job that you do, it's not who you are, you've got to think about like, what tools, how am I setting up that third, fourth, fifth shot? What do I need to do to get this person to the angle that I need them? Because yeah, at the end of the day, I got to get home.
And that's what we, and exactly, that's right on, because we also talk about, okay, what are your pre-escalation thoughts? How am I going to do this? What am I going to do? The other thing I like to talk about is, and so if I talk to you about a relationship, you probably give good advice. Now, if you're in the bad relationship, your advice for yourself is probably not as good because you don't have that lens. So we always talk about kind of removing yourself a little bit from the situation. You roll up on some individuals and they're F-bombing you and all this. And if you're in there taking it personally, it's going to escalate you. If you pull out and go, okay, whatever, it doesn't matter. It's not personal because they don't even know me. So we sometimes think of taking that step back and kind of overseeing, because I'm way better at giving people advice than doing it in my own life. You know, it's
same.
Those are the things that we want to look at. So if we can take that moment to pull out, and like I said, we use the calm and steady term. You slow down in a sense, not, you know, speed wise, because it, and you go in and you can take that moment to, okay, observe what's going on, listen to what they're saying, and not get caught up in that, whatever issue that other person is having. And we see those, you know, I have a friend, she's a PD sergeant, and so another friend of ours goes, what do you do when someone flips you off? Well, I just smile and wave and say, oh, that's cool. Cause I don't take it personally. It's not me. It's that person, whatever bias they may have, whatever notions they have about law enforcement, it's not me. So those are the things we always kind of helps you settle, because you can get caught up. I mean, as little as I work, I can, you know, get caught up and think, okay, why is this person on this attack? You know, you don't even know me. I'm just trying to, got a call, you're doing a disturbance, why are you doing that? What's happening? And, you know, trying, but if we can, you know, obviously not, I don't even want to use the term, just keep our heart rates lower, it's not going to create a larger volume of escalation.
Well, and I think, so when we were talking before we started the podcast, you mentioned having like the self-care component, and one of the things you talk, that example of what if someone flips you off, like we've all seen the video of that trooper that gets flipped off by the kid and he just fucking loses his mind on him. And what I try and communicate to people is that officer is obviously not offended by someone that flips him off. And I flip off everybody in the class just to kind of prove that point. Like no one is offended by me. Like right now I'm flipping you off. No one, you and I, we don't care. But depending on how full of stress your life is, or how full of stress your body is in any given particular moment, that's what determines your response. Do you have the emotional capacity to not care that someone is doing something that is offensive to you? And if you don't have the capacity, unfortunately, our physiology just doesn't allow those two things to exist. If you're too full of stress, you can't also have an even like a, you know, a super, super stressful experience and be calm about it. We can only do so much because we are limited as homo sapiens, that like, we just have to know these things about our bodies, and we don't.
In law enforcement world, they forget that they're humans. Because, and then we talk about the self-care is one aspect, but also that's a component of what we talk about in de-escalation. What's going on at home? Are you, you know, there's a guy that sent us a sleep studies. If you're awake 17 to 19 hours, your blood alcohol content is 0.05. So you're close, you know, drunk, you know, you're not drunk, but it's that fatigue in your mindset that you can't make rash decisions. Or if you are fighting at home and you go to work, or you're worried about finances and you go to work, those things follow you, you know, you know, we talk about just cleansing here, and then you get so tired, you're not sleeping right, you're not eating right. You see what people eat on patrol nowadays, they're better. They're eating, bring lunch boxes, but it's really not great food for you. And so that has to elevate into it. And that's the same thing we think about, you know, community. They bring in what's going on at home, why they're so angry, because they're speeding to do this. And so besides the self-care, that's part of their de-escalation. Then we talk about self-care. Take care of you. Take time for yourself. And we even, in our classes, we say, law enforcement friends are awesome. Have community friends as well. So you have, you know, you see different things. One of our trainers, he said, yeah, I did that. I went to a party and everyone was acting weird. And then he goes up to his friend. He goes, hey, what's going on? He goes, no one wants to, you know, they're afraid to do anything. They don't want to smoke pot. You're here. And he's going, well, you know, and he's all right, I'll leave. So we had to leave the party so that people could actually have fun. So, So sometimes that works out, sometimes it doesn't, but it's any of us, you know, self-care, like for you, you're hearing these podcasts, you know, you're talking to one SWAT amazing dude who was going down that rabbit hole, but that is an energy that goes to you as well. Cause then that's the same with me. I work with survivors of assault, sexual, domestic violence, human trafficking. And it weighs on you.
It totally does. It's so interesting that you say that. So I have a volunteer team and we meet once a month, and not this past month, but the month before that, like, dude, my fucking mental health was like in the tanks, and I hadn't realized that it got there, one, over time, right? It's cumulative. And in my DMs, my private messages, mm-hmm. daily, I'm hearing people's stress yeah. stories, or I'm hearing people's critical incidents or whatever. And then what had happened was there was this, I don't know if you'd heard about that former Miss USA that committed suicide.
Yeah.
Okay. I look at a person like that and I see myself. I see someone that's, one, we look similar. Like, we both have like this big curly hair and we both have like the same color skin tone, and she's smiling and she's out there doing this philanthropy, and behind closed doors, she's got this mental health problem. And then she jumps off of the building. That fucked me up so hard. And then I started thinking to myself, I went down, like, I didn't realize like where my mental health was until I was like, oh my God, what if I commit suicide?
Yeah.
What if that's my story? And I was just like trying to keep that all to myself, because I was just like, oh my God, like, I have this fucking program. Like, I train people how to look for these markers and all these things. And I hadn't realized just how these things just all kind of pile up, like, even on my end. And it's something that I teach. So, and then I realized that, like, oh man, I am like full of stress, and I just like broke down. But no one is impervious to that experience.
No, and you're gauging it. And so the good thing is you recognize it, because, you know, the old funny saying is that plumbers have the worst plumbing, doctors have the worst health, painters have the worst pain on their homes.
Yeah.
People are out there helping super each other are the worst self caregivers, even though we're telling everyone to care for yourself. Yeah. And that's the thing. And at least you monitor, because you need the monitor. I've had five personal friends and one on duty suicides, you know, and you're looking at their lives and it's going, and kind of what you probably looked at Miss America, because we don't know the details and what was going on and where her mental health was and if there was propensity to it, or was she deficient in certain things and maybe not getting the help that they can have, you know. So there is other markers that you may not have, but it is something that you have to make a promise to yourself, is that okay, and you know it, you can't, I was going to say the effing word, but you can't effing be good at what you do if you don't, you know, rest and do your thing, because that's what makes you better as a parent too. You know, half the time I want to put my kids on Craigslist. Okay. I'm just putting the ad up. Let's see who's going to be any takers, because, you know, but for me, the more relaxed I am, the better I engage with them. You know, the more I am relaxed and, you know, cause you know, it's like, you know, we talk about de-escalation and it's like, they yell, you yell louder. How is that ever going to ever work out at the end? You know, it doesn't. And sometimes I catch myself and go, because I came from an Italian household, it's like, okay, so this doesn't work. I already know that as well.
But it doesn't feel like it in the moment. Goddamn.
Yeah, the moment is like, great.
But no, it's like, I'm gonna win.
Yeah, listen, you little 9-year-old, I'm taking you down. But yeah, it's we get better, and those are the things that we want everyone to do. Not just, I mean, I listen, you know, I work with people in special needs community, working with people developing disabilities, and you see it like, oh yeah, I yelled at those people and I'm all in my head. Well, you're burned out. You should probably take a vacation because, you know, they lose that gift and sense, and then you're not as good. So we talked to officers and say, take time for yourself, you know, and we talk community, same thing, parents and caregivers and everything, take time, you know, you have to do it. It's the only way you can recharge. And like I said, especially like in your world, I have many therapist friends that are half cuckoo at times because they're hearing so many. I have a friend that, oh my God, she's getting a death notice every other day. She's, you know, she's working with treatment programs and, oh yeah, he just passed away. I was with him for 3 years. Like, oh my God, you got the worst life. And I have to hang up because I feel sad after talking. But it's, you know, and, but it's taking that moment, and that's where, you know, we want, because, you know, I know you had, you mentioned, but right now our 2021 in California, it's still, there's a higher rate of suicide than there is online, you know, in line of duty. You know, where, you know, officer is more likely to die by his own weapon or her weapon than from out in the field. So, I mean, it's still like, I think it was 173 versus 124. 173 was suicide. So we still have a lot. We lost a couple just in the last couple months. One was retired, one was on duty or not, or still working. And so, but that help, that has to be with that giving permission. I remember I heard on your podcast, things are getting better. I think departments are more understanding that this is a very high stress, very, I mean, you see things, you see dead bodies, you see dead babies, you see dead kids that are the same age as your kids, you know, out in traffic, you know, accidents or shootings. And if you don't do something for yourself, you know, and it turns into, oh yeah, you know, have a guy go, oh yeah, I drink a lot. And you know, I gamble. Oh, that's really good. You know, I mean, he's joking, but it's, we want to, you know, healthier ways now, you know, to whether it's exercise, eating properly, and getting that rest. That's why I mentioned that sleep thing, because, you know, sometimes we think we can go all night, all day, 3 days in a row, and it affects your judgment. It affects everything on you when you're not sleeping, and it's part of what the body needs. I sleep terrible, but I'm trying to sleep better, you know, because, I mean, we, you know, I think, you know, I mean, even though, you know, I'm up, okay, what can we do next? And, you know, I'm answering people email all hours of night. What were you doing about 1 a.m.? Well, I slept for an hour, and then I woke up, and then. But it's part
of this. God, now it's a terrible man. You need some supplements.
I do. Yeah, I'm gonna go on. But yeah, it's like I said, it's, we all have to do it. And you, we, me, any in your industry, we just have to put self care at the kind of the top of the list, because then we're way better at helping. We're so much more equipped.
Well, Stuart, I'm so glad that we were able to talk about, you know, de-escalation from this different alternative view versus what most officers, I think, are really used to hearing it as. And I hope that there are people that want to bring your training out to their department, recognizing that de-escalation is not about you showing up and telling officers that they're fucking racist and they suck and every situation is going to go hunky dory and whatever. And I think that that's refreshing, because the last thing that we need, and this happens all the time, are officers sitting in trainings that they're just completely checked out of.
Yep.
Or we just
we start off every class by saying, officer safety is number one. We want you to go home. We don't, you know, because sometimes people forget that when they're teaching these de-escalation guards, well, you need to do this. Well, no, you need to go home safe first. That's number one. And then we can add tools to that aspect and those interactions. And and it's not even, we just try and just explain some situations, give a few basic tools from the leave to make it simple, make those interactions simple. And, you know, and we talk about it. Escalation sometimes is de-escalation. You know, we talk, well, I have to draw my weapon. Well, then you have to draw your weapon. You know, it's not telling you to put your gun in the car. It's just giving you tools as each level, and the same thing. And like I said, it's a systemic change we're trying. That means community's got to help out. We look at dispatches helping the officers. We look at as they help their officers be less stressed. All those things is part of everyone being able to be better engaged and safer. And that's really what we care about.
I love that approach. I love that approach to closing, to bridging that gap, to closing that chasm just a little bit more. It's the understanding that it's only one person that has to make the change. Like, I think about my relationship with my ex-husband. Like, in order for our relationship to be cohesive, it is not one-sided. It's just not. Like, it relationships don't work that way. And we've taken this approach to police being the ones that have to make all the changes and be the, you know, do all these things and be the most compassionate and be the ones that are whatever, because they're the ones that are in authority, which that's true. So they have more responsibility, but we're all a part of that relationship. We all have to be taking steps forward.
I mean, even just let's go back to your ex-husband and you. I mean, yes, you guys, there's two sides of everything and two understandings and someone, and with communication it helps. But at the end of the day,
don't take his side, Stuart.
Hey, sounds like I just see some things right now. There we go. But, you know, maybe we can talk off air. But at the end of the day, if you guys are getting along, guess who also wins? Is the kids, right? You know, I mean, so that's the same thing. If community can get along with law enforcement, then also the interactions that the kids will see out there are positive. And I really like, you know, our responsibility, even part of this bridge of the divide, is looking at younger children to make a connection. This is our opportunity to make a connection and build, I don't want to say fan, but a friend of law enforcement as they grow. And that's what we need. And that's just the same. It's just, like I said, the more we work together, the way the trickle down is much better. Like you and your ex-husband, which I'm not really taking aside, but I don't know. So, but yeah, it's just the communication part. So that's really what we're just trying to do.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. I appreciate your perspective, and I hope that you guys have so much success. And again, thank you so much for being a sponsor for that training.
Yes.
I can't wait to tell people about you on Wednesday, or is it Thursday? On Thursday.
You forgot me, everyone. I was like waiting for the right prom date who never showed up.
Oh my God, I did.
It's the 7th already?
Stewart's, one of his colleagues or someone that works for him was like, he was like up my butt about like making sure that like what do you need? Are we good? And I was like, yeah, dude, totally, like back up. Okay. And then I get this fucking phone call from Stewart, like 5 minutes past our appointment. He's like,
hello, did you forget
what's
me?
What's going on? I was like, fuck. So tell Brad that yes, I owe him and you guys a cup of coffee.
I even said, Brad, you're like not doing a good job as my manager. And it was, he's not a manager, but we were joking. He goes, and then I told him what you said. He goes, I think I'm owed apology. And I go, I think you're right.
He crushed it. Okay. Thank you so much for having, or for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you. Take care. Appreciate it. Everyone be safe out there.